Welcome to your Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brent. I'm joined by Matt Thompson. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm good, man. I get to talk to my favorite club. Like him so much, we get to do this podcast twice.
So. Yeah, due to technical difficulties, I'm actually taking Mike's place in this podcast. And this is my first prospect pod that I've actually got to do through the two seasons that we've done it. So I'm kind of excited. So
nice. Well, chip in wherever you please, man. A lot of times I feel like I'm talking too much in some of these. So,
well, I mean, the fans pay for you to do talking, not for me. So,
wait, they pay you?
You don't get paid?
Oh, no.
Don't tell Justin I told you. yeah. So why don't we start talking about the Cardinals today? But before we do that, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached?
Sure, MD Top FWFB on Twitter. You probably know that by now. I'm a bad tweeter, so if you like bad tweets, I'm your guy.
Or if you like talking about Mike Matheny.
Don't know.
I can be reached at BBrentsFWFB. Why don't we jump right in into, obviously, the player that everyone really wants to know about is Alex Reyes. What are your thoughts on Reyes going into this year, Matt?
Sure, I think he's got a different it's an unusual development for this year. Obviously, everyone knows about the Tommy John surgery he had last season. Last spring training, before the spring. He should be back and throwing off a mound in games by May. So I think by the beginning of May, around there, he'll report to AAA Memphis and you know, get some time off the mound. And I think he makes a run to the Major League club probably by June sometime. There was some talk about him possibly getting in the mix for some saves this year with the bullpen situation, what it is. But they just acquired Dominic Leone literally the day before we were recording this. So I think he might be the front runner for saves now, him and Gregerson and Cecil. So I think Reyes is going to join Jack Flaherty as kind of insurance for the rotation. And depending on how soon they need to turn to that insurance, Reyes might be up before Flaherty. But if they need to go right away, if Wainwright gets hurt or somebody falters right away, Flaherty would be the first guy probably. But everyone knows Reyes, the big fastball. I put an 80 grade on the fastball with some movement up in the upper 90s. Out of the bullpen, he can sit 97 to 100 miles an hour. It's crazy. As a starter, he's more 95, 97 miles an hour. My favorite pitch with him that's come along a long way is the changeup. There's some sweet video here. I'll put a link to it. Changeup has historically been the pitch that people kind of question with him, but he came up out of the bullpen in 2016. He doesn't have the perfect command of the pitch. Obviously, his command is what's lacking, what making him, you know, from a bona fide number one is the command a little bit right now. But the changeup is a phenomenal pitch. He went to when he was in the fall league before he got suspended for the weed suspension. He was focusing pretty much on throwing the changeup in Arizona, and it took off, kind of similar to like when Kopech did when he was coming up with Boston. And when he went to the fall league, just focused on the off-speed pitches. But Reyes focused on that. He's got a good curveball, good slider. I think the knock on him is the command probably at best is an average, is only average. So I don't know if he reaches pure number one upside or number one as a realistic outcome, but he does have that type of ceiling. I think, I don't know. For me, he's still the top pitching prospect in the game. I know that's probably going out on a limb a little bit because I think a lot of people have Kopech, but I think Reyes is up this year before Kopech, no matter what. And I know Kopech is younger than Reyes, but I think Reyes is he's in a better situation being in the National League. I like what the Cardinals do with pitchers, obviously. You know, we'll see what happened with Luke Weaver and all that guys. We're going to touch on a lot of these guys. There's a lot of talent in the upper levels of the system, but Reyes is the cream of the crop, no question. I think ultimate upside is something similar to like Chris Archer if it all pans out for him. So.
Oh, that's what fantasy owners really want, is someone to be able to get a lot of strikeouts and someone who's able to get wins. And the Cardinals are a team that's going to be able to get wins, provided that they keep adding to this offense. And obviously, they've added Ozuna this year. I know you want them to add more, but at least they have a competent offense, unlike my team, who doesn't. What are your thoughts on Reyes in like a keeper league? Is this someone that you're looking to keep, or is it definitely kind of borderline in that type of situation if you only have, like, say, five to ten keepers?
Well, I would say if you already kept him last year, you have no reason not to keep him this year because he's actually going to pitch. You know what I'm saying? So if you kept him last year without not pitching, it's a no-brainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
and he's what, a guy, what if he was a player that, you know, you maybe added mid to late season?
Obviously, every situation is a little bit different. I would definitely try to make room. In our RDI draft, which is a startup dynasty for RotoWire, I'm trying to find exactly where Reyes went in that draft. Of course, I picked him. Shouldn't be surprised.
So probably like the second round.
No. Reyes went pick 94 overall, and I think that's about right. I probably reached a little early, but in Dynasty League, the number one rule is get the players you want. You know what I mean? Because you can keep them forever at no cost. I reached a little bit, but he went right after Nick Senzel at pick 93. He went right in front of Brendan Rodgers, who went pick 99. Bo Bichette went pick 106. I think that sounds about right. I like Reyes. Like I said, he's my number one pitching prospect at the game. And as of right now, I'm doing a top 400 for the site. It'll be in the draft guide. And my rough draft on prospect rankings has him number 9. That could change, but he's number 9, and he's the second pitcher behind Shohei Ohtani. So.
You brought up Jack Flaherty. What are your thoughts on Flaherty, exactly?
Flaherty, for me, is as sexy as Reyes' upside is. Flaherty doesn't have that. Flaherty's number roughly is going to be about the 50 to 60 range in my list as of right now. Obviously, that can change. The thing with Flaherty that I like is he's got a deep pitch mix. And the deep pitch mix is going to, you know, I think he's a mid-rotation guy long term. He's 6'4". He's got the perfect frame from that high school, the same high school as Max Fried and Lucas Giolito. Same, he was teammates with them in high school, actually. All three of them guys on the same staff. Low to mid-90s velocity. Can get it up to 95. Doesn't sit 95, but gets it up there. The thing with his major league debut last year, it didn't go great, but it was 21 innings. From what I saw there, he lacked fastball command. I think ultimately that, obviously, it's hard to take much out of a 21-inning sample, but he destroyed the minor leagues last year, like just by pure number basis. But I think ultimately he settles in as a 8.5 K per nine guy, maybe a K an inning guy. He should definitely lower the walks down significantly. He's going to be a good whip asset. Last year in the minor leagues between AA and AAA, he had a cumulative 2.18 ERA in 25 games, 148 innings pitched. So he's going deep enough into games. 35 walks and 147 strikeouts, only 120 hits allowed. So he's got good stuff. He's advanced. He's due to, you know, he'll play a significant role this year in the majors. And the upside's not there, but I think he can be a solid high end for your fantasy team, number 3, probably realistically a number 4 or even 5. But he's a strike thrower, and that'll get you pretty far.
Do you have a player you would comp him to? I know you're not a big comp guy. I'm curious, so our listeners have an idea of the type of player that he could potentially be.
Not really. Almost like a best case scenario, like a Marcus Stroman.
Okay. I mean, because I'm a big Stroman fan. Yeah.
I don't think he gets there, but he could be. He's athletic. He was a two way prospect when he got drafted by the Cardinals in the first round, same year as Luke Weaver, and that's pretty good returns on that two first round picks in that draft. But you know, he's also a third base prospect that probably could have gone in the third or fourth round based on that. So he's an athlete for sure.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, for a player coming up through the minors, have good command of, you know, like a slider and a curveball, like he has, and you know,
he's a high floor guy, and that's value.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to have someone who's a high floor guy on your staff, because those are the people who, through thick and thin, are always going to be able to keep you afloat. For those people who, you know, may sustain an injury or someone who has an off year, you know, there's always a player that's like that. So, are there any other pitching prospects that you're really, really high on this year?
We'll go for pitchers. Jordan Hicks, I have him decently high on my list. He had a weird season. I saw him pitch personally in low A when this Peoria team came through Kane County. And he's 6'2", 185, really athletic delivery, really quick tempo. 21-year-old. He'll be 22 in September. You know, big Texan. Everyone likes the pitching prospects from Texas. 2.74 ERA, 105 innings, 95 strikeouts, 45 walks. The walks are the killer for him right now. The walks and the lack of a really good third pitch right now. But he gets the fastball at 99. He was touching 100 in relief stints in the Arizona Fall League. Cardinals sent him to the Fall League, which that and then John Mozeliak made comments that Jordan Hicks would be in the bullpen mix at the end of, you know, is possibly getting saves, which I think is an absurd comment because he hasn't pitched above high A besides the Fall League, and you're already putting him in the mix for a closer when he's a starting pitching prospect. But they don't want to spend money on the relief on the bullpen, so they're going to use internal options. They have a lot. The future closer in the organization is a guy we're going to get to a little further in the list, in my opinion. But I think Hicks, I like Hicks a lot. I think he's got next to Alex Reyes, the most explosive stuff in the organization. Good two pitch mix, like I said, with that curveball. The curveball is just nasty, nasty movement. It's too advanced for the minors. He just needs to spot it better. Like I said, the thing holding him back right now is the changeup and his command, which isn't you know, anything unusual for a 21-year-old pitching prospect. But if he can get either one of those two to take a step forward, he could be a fantasy number two because the strikeouts will be high enough. But if not, I think he's a back-end option or a mid-rotation guy, and neither one of those have value. But if he's going to have that as a ceiling, I'd almost kind of rather him work the back end and get some saves for me at least.
What about someone like Ryan Helsley or Dakota Hudson?
I like both of those guys. I'll touch on Helsley first. I think he's going to be up this year out of the back end of the bullpen. I think ultimately he's a starter long term. But you know who he reminds me of a little bit is Trevor Rosenthal, because he's got the, you know, from the Northeast State University. He's a fifth round pick. Or obviously Rosenthal was he's drafted way lower than the fifth round. But I really like what Helsley did this year. He climbed all the way up from high A to triple A. So he can sit 93, 96 with the fastball with movement, and it touches 98. Got a big power curveball, a changeup, and a cutter that also flash. Command, obviously, is the thing with him. 2.72 ERA across all three levels this year. I think he starts in AAA Memphis. I think Hicks starts in AA Springfield. So I think Helsley has a potential to be up this year out of the bullpen, but if he's up out of the bullpen for a significant time, it means something went significantly wrong. I do think he's going to be worthy of September call-up, and I think he's a really sneaky arm to watch. I just took him in the 39th round in RDI in a 40-round league because I really, really like the stuff. Obviously, he needs to tighten up the command, but you're looking at a power arm with over a K per inning upside. So I really like Ryan Helsley, 6'2", 205, ideal pitcher frame. It's a lot to like in this package. It's real simple delivery. It's nice.
And what about Dakota Hudson?
I think Dakota Hudson is the long-term closer in this organization. I say that because I just went over all these starting pitching prospects in front of him, not mentioning Carlos Martinez, who's an established young major leaguer. Michael Wacha's, you know, a nice established young major league pitcher. They signed Miles Mikolas. They got Wainwright, and I'm blanking for some reason on the other starter, but they've got Reyes and Flaherty and guys like this that are. Luke Weaver is the other guy too, obviously. So there's a lot of
Mike's going to hate you forever for forgetting Luke Weaver.
For a little context, it's after midnight right now where I am, so I'm a little tired. So I got to cut me some slack. But
I mean, it's 1 a.m. here, so
right. That's what we get. Give you our friends of fantasy benefits. But Dakota Hudson, I like him a lot at 93, 95 from the right side. Can touch 97 in short stints. Obviously, short stint would be a nice bullpen arm. 6'4", 185 out of Mississippi State. Power arm in college. Breeze through the GCL and Palm Beach, Florida State League in this first semi-pro year. In 2017, he started the season in Double A, pitched 114 innings, went up to Triple A Memphis. Threw another about 50 or so when you factor in the playoff innings there. Heavy ground ball tilt, which is very, very nice. Cutter slider hybrid pitch is a nasty secondary. Also throws a curveball and mixes in a changeup. I think as a starter, he might be a little vulnerable against lefties. Obviously, the slider and the cutter kind of negate that a little bit. But I think with his ground ball tilt and good velocity, he should be a good back end option because I think the stuff will tick up. And the strikeouts will come because as a starting pitching prospect, he's a little light on the strikeouts, and that's going to cap the value. Trying to pull up the numbers right now as we speak, but he's not a high K guy at all. He threw a little bit over 150 innings this year. So again, he shouldn't be shut down later in the year if they need him. He should be up to at least willing to go 170, 180 innings. I only had 96 strikeouts in 150 innings, so gives you an idea of where you're at with that. But over 2 ground balls per flyout. So that's huge. I think, you know, he's a nice dominant potential late inning arm, and I think there's a lot of value in that, especially nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, when he came out in the draft and I had talked to you about him, I never would have guessed that he would have been a closer, but I mean, his ground ball rate at 57% in 2017 is phenomenal. I mean, when you get pitchers who are like around 45-46%, he's at 57. If he's able to duplicate that, that's going to be great, especially with the infield that he has. There's going to be players that can make plays. It's going to be good for that type of player, and it will be good because for someone who doesn't get a lot of strikeouts, to keep the ball in the park, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I like him going forward. I mean, you brought up the ground ball rate, 57%, which is amazing. MLB average is 45. So, yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. Is there any other pitchers that you want to touch on at this time?
We'll touch on a few later, but I want to get into this outfield glut that we have near the top of the system.
Yeah. I know that you're a big Tyler O'Neill fan. Why don't you talk a little bit about him?
Full disclosure, he's neck and neck with Jack Flaherty for me for that number 2 spot in the system. I'm leaning Tyler O'Neill just because of the upside. Major League right fielders has an average hit 256, 332, 443. I don't see any reason why Tyler O'Neill can't do that. And just watching him play, he's the type of guy, he shines in the bigger stage. He's really phenomenal in the playoffs when he's with the Mariners system. And now for Triple A Memphis last year, he was a dynamite in the playoffs as well. Cumulative line for him last year across 2 different PCL clubs, famously being traded for Marco Gonzalez from Seattle. 246, 321, 499 slug, 26 doubles, 31 homers, and 14 stolen bases. Obviously, there's a couple concerns here. The batting average is obviously never going to be an asset here. He hits the ball hard. The Cardinals are a big stat-cast oriented club, and they kept giving Randall Grichuk chances after chances after chance to prove himself just because of they like his batted ball data. And Tyler O'Neill, I think a realistic outcome for O'Neill is Randall Grichuk. It's on the scale, but ultimately I think he can be a little bit better. It's hard to say this but I think he's even a little bit more athletic than Grichuk is, which is kind of ridiculous to say. Tyler O'Neill isn't going to be a zero in the speed category either. Had 14 stolen bases last year to go with those 31 home runs. The issue here is the 73% contact rate, 151 strikeouts. Good arm for right field, so that's not an issue. He's going to stick out there. The power is definitely the go-to tool here, and I think with the trade for Grichuk should push another guy we're going to talk about in a second, Harrison Bader, up to the Major League roster, maybe to start the season even. So Neil and another guy we're going to talk to, Jose Garcia, will be the primary outfielders in AAA with Mercado probably mixed in there. But with Tyler O'Neill, the athleticism is premium. I'm a little bit worried about the walk rate after coming to the Cardinals. Dropped from 11% with Seattle to 6% with the Cardinals in AAA. So obviously he's an aggressive guy. But I think the upside here is fantastic. I think you're looking at a legitimately 30 to 35 homer upside, and he can even chip in 10 to 12 bases. It's just his ultimate value is going to be decided by the hit tool, and I'm kind of out on the hit tool right now, but you can strike out at a 25% clip like he did last year. If you can keep that down to 25, 26, 27%, the power will play. So that's the thing to watch.
I'm a big Tyler O'Neill fan. I was a big fan coming into last year when he was in Seattle. I thought that he would be up, sometime late May, early June. I thought that he was going to be able to come up and play, and he had it when he got traded. I thought that was going to be a good situation. Obviously, they did have a lot of outfielders, but as the season progressed, I thought that there was a chance that he could still have some future value on this type of team. And obviously, they go and they move Biscotti, they go and move Grichuk, and obviously, they go bring in Ozuna. But I think that he's going to have some value on this team within the next year or so. Harrison Bader is going to be up and probably playing, what would you say, every single day to start off the season?
No. I think the starting outfield is pretty much set, and it's a good outfield. You got Ozuna, Pham, and Fowler from left to right, and that's a pretty nice outfield. Bader, I think Jose Martinez will be up as well. He can play the outfield corners and first base. So he might be in the mix for bench bats. But I think Harrison Bader has a chance to be with the club out of spring training as kind of their backup everything outfielder. But with the way this roster is set up, they might not need to carry anyone but Martinez as far as an outfield bench but guy, because all three outfielders in their starting lineup can play center field. So it might be in their best interest to keep Bader down a little bit, you know, just to give him more time, because he's not a finished product. He's far from it. And I think a lot of the value this year is going to come from Bader being a lefty killer. He's a super aggressive guy. He's got some power and speed. I think ultimately he's a 260-ish hitter at peak because of the aggressive approach. He's not going to walk much. But I do think ultimately Harrison Bader is a guy, you know, 73% contact rate in Memphis, 72 in St. Louis in his brief sample. So that was able to transfer over. But I think he's a guy, 270 is ultimate, probably peak for average, 20 home runs and 15 stolen bases. That's a very nice player. And he could replicate those numbers as soon as 2019. It's just he's going to be blocked by this outfield, because this outfield is intact through 2019 with Tulo Osuna as a free agent. So he's a nice flyer in NL only. And for mixed leagues this year, I'm leaving him alone just because there's so much uncertainty of playing time. But he's an aggressive hitter, and sometimes that's true and a fault. He's never going to walk very much, but he's got some power and some speed, so that's always interesting for fantasy.
And what about Jose Adonis Garcia? Because he was a player that you guys signed, I think, back in February of last year, and he was a player that I was interested in in some rookie leagues that I had, thinking that he could possibly come up at some point last year, just because I thought his bat was good enough. But what are your thoughts on him?
I think he's got the highest floor of any of these outfielders that we're talking about. Bader, O'Neill, we'll get to Mercado, and we'll get to a couple other guys. The highest floor in the system belongs to Garcia. His first season stateside, which is important to remember, because, you know, first season he's acclimating not only to playing baseball in a new country, but eating new food, around people that speak new language, driving, learning to drive, learning English, everything. And he still put up a nice stat line over two levels. I'm going to pull it up to make sure I have it right. But I like Garcia a lot. I think he fits in. He's kind of like – he's going to be 25 opening day, so – He's a little older for a prospect, but his first season stateside, he had 290, 340, 476, and had 34 doubles, 15 homers, and 15 steals. I don't think that's far off from what he can do at the big leagues' ultimate ceiling. I think he's probably a 275, 280 guy. I think he can probably go 20-20 at peak. Again, playing time is going to be a problem with this team for him. Just trying to break out, because there's so much talent in the upper levels of the minor leagues for offense, but he's got more pop than you would think. He's a plus runner with a cannon arm in right field. He's going to have plenty of extra base hits. I like Garcia a lot, and he's under the radar, and he's going to be in my top 100 fantasy prospects. So probably slide in about the 75-80 range off first guess, but I like Garcia a lot.
Yeah, like I said, I'm a big Garcia fan. I like his bat. I like the tools that he brings. I just, you know, being blunt and having this many prospects makes it a little tough for him to be able to do anything at this current time. There was one more outfielder who doesn't really have any real fantasy value going forward, but is there any potential that Nick Plummer can ever retain any fantasy value for us?
I'm out on Nick Plummer. I do think he has a good plate approach right now, which is kind of the thing that's carrying him. Injury-riddled career so far. He broke his hand in 2016. 2017, he missed a month with an oblique strain. I watched him play in in high A. I was more impressed with a couple other players on that team, like Dylan Carlson and their plate approach. But, I mean, the stat line for Plummer in the Midwest League as a 20-year-old, 198, 353, 288. So not a lot of power. He's walking. But, yeah, I'm worried about the hand injury and the contact rate. But And in this organization, it's easy for him to get passed up. And they just acquired J.B. Woodman from Toronto in a separate trade. And he was in low A also this year. I think he's got a nice power-speed mix. Mississippi State bat. Strikes out a ton, though. That's his, you know, issue. Just two other guys I think have significant fantasy value eventually, but they're going to need a trade. And I think that's Oscar Mercado, number one. Everyone knows what the skill set Magnir Sierra had and what he brought to the table. And I think, you know, Baseball America had Mercado as the best defensive outfielder in the system, even over a guy like Sierra. So you know he's going to play. They moved him from shortstop to center field before this season, and he took off. Prior to 2017, his batting average was never above the 254 mark, and he never hit for power. This year, in 120 games in Double A Springfield, he hit 287, 341, 428, with 13 home runs and 38 stolen bases. So the Cardinals put him on the 40-man roster this winter to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. He went from a complete non-prospect to a prospect now, just based off what he did in 2017. And, you know, he makes decent contact. He's a speed guy. I like him a lot going forward, but it's hard to get too much in love with him because, you know, how crowded everything is in front of him. But ultimately, I think he might get lost in the shuffle here and be a fourth outfielder just because of how much talent there is.
And who was the other player?
Randy Arozarena, another Cuban guy they just signed in 2016. Didn't hit for a lot of power in his first season stateside, so to kind of take it for a grain of salt because it's his first season. Speed and power, what he's kind of advertised as, speed and contact ability. And he hasn't really hit for much power in his, you know, stops. In Springfield, he only hit 3 home runs with 10 doubles. But in high A Palm Beach, he had 22 doubles, 3 triples, and 8 home runs. And that's a tough part to hit in the Florida State League. But the thing with him is he went to Mexico this winter to keep playing. He's 22, so he's a little bit younger than Garcia, signed at the same time. 292, 366, 558 in Mexico. Yes, it's Mexican League. I understand that. But in 64 games, the dude had 40 extra base hits, 25 doubles, and 14 home runs, and a triple, so the next 40. 40 extra base hits in 64 games, that's good no matter what league you play in. So I know it's Mexican League, but Randy Arozarena is a guy to watch. You can get him for pretty much nothing right now. He's a potential flyer, but again, it's crowded. A couple other outfielders real quick I'll touch on. Victor Garcia, power-only guy. Wade Infante is another potential high upside guy in the lower rungs of the minor leagues, not even a full season ball yet. But he's projected to be a center fielder. He's going to have above average speed and power. He's already flashing that now. I think the hit tool is a question for me. He's going to strike out a little bit. But in Johnson City this year in rookie ball in the Appy League, 299, 374, 491 slug, 11 doubles, 7 homers, and 11 steals in 43 games. 7 and 11 in 43 games is nice. Hit nearly 300. Wade Infante is another exciting upside prospect. And Jonathan Machado is another outfielder. There's Steve stacked in outfielders. Really contact, bat to ball kind of guy. 323, 381, 435. Not a lot of power in his game. He's kind of like Ichiro-esque, like running while you're out of the box kind of swing. He's another Cuban, another high-priced international signing from the Dominican, I believe. 90% contact rate in his first season stateside. Only a 9.4% strikeout rate, but only walks 6% of the time. Hyper-aggressive, but makes a ton of contact. So Jonathan Machado is another guy to follow.
When we talk on some of these shortstops that they have, and we have Sosa and we have Delvin Perez, what are your thoughts on both?
I like Yairo Munoz better. Yairo Munoz was a part of that Stephen Piscotty trade with Oakland. And I think he's going to be up this year. I think he's a super utility guy, can play shortstop, second base, third base, really nice glove, can even play center field if he had to, or the corner outfield spots. Really, really nice glove. What he did this year in the minor leagues, I'm trying to pull up the numbers again, so bear with me. But Yairo Munoz, he's kind of the insurance to Paul DeJong if things don't go well for DeJong this year, which is not out of the question with the approach issues he has. But, you know, Munoz is soon to be 23 here in a few days. He's major league ready with probably a half season more in AAA. He'll be major league ready. In the Oakland system last year, he hit 300, 330, 464, 26 doubles, 4 triples, 13 bombs, and stole 22 bases, only caught 5 times. Extreme bat-to-ball guy, only struck out 81 times. Doesn't walk much. He's kind of a Ledes Diaz in the sense that doesn't walk a lot, shows decent power, but he's a better defensive version of Diaz. And I like that a lot because Diaz's problems were with defense. He made a lot of contact. He showed some pop. I think Munoz's power is probably a touch lower than Diaz's, what it was in his breakout season. But I really like Munoz going forward, and it was a hell of a get. And Max Schrock was also another piece that came over with him. All Max Schrock did is in Double A was hit 321, 379, 422. He's a second base only prospect, so he has to really hit. He's basically DJ LeMahieu without Coors Field, so take that for what it's worth. Not going to offer a lot of power, not going to offer a lot of speed, but it's extreme bat to ball. 42 strikeouts and 34 walks, so the plate skills are a massive, massive plus. He struck out only 58 times in the minors and 762 plate appearances entering 2017. So, he had another successful year that. Below average arm, not really going to play anywhere else other than second. He's only 5'8", so he doesn't have that going for him. Left-handed swinger. I like Schrock a lot, but I think he's a potential bench bat. So, and then you talked on Edmundo Sosa. I'm not a Sosa guy. He had a lost year with injury. Handmade bone surgery for a guy that doesn't have a lot of power as it is, so that's troubling. I think he's a good slick defender at shortstop, but he's going to get buried in this system. And then a lot of guys have given up on Delvin Perez. You know the backstory by now. Questionable makeup concerns, failed PED test before he was drafted, fell down to 23. The projection's still there, 6'3", 175, plus speed projection, plus bat-to-ball projection. It's not there yet. Nagging injuries have also kind of slowed him down. Last year only hit 203, but he had 203, 314, 271 line. Makes a lot of mistakes in the field that he shouldn't make. Has all the actions to play shortstop. I'm not giving up on Perez. Obviously, the ceiling is still sky high. It's going to be a long, slow burn for him in the minor leagues to get there, though. So he's the kind of a guy he's going to be around in the minors a lot. So for a long time, but he's worth the investment, but I'd hold off a few years.
What are your thoughts on Carson Kelly?
Toughest player in the system for me to rank by far. I personally am not a fan of the bat. I think he'll be right around league average bat for a catching prospect, which is fine because the defense is plus. The arm is plus. He's quick behind the plate. He's a good blocker, good framer. The arm itself is average, but he's so quick it makes up for it. Obviously, Molina's going to be around until 2020, so that's going to hurt Kelly's development because he's going to be the backup catcher for a while. I would send him back to AAA next year just so he can play every day because sitting behind Molina, you're not going to play too much. But Major League catchers had an average of 245, 315, 406. I think he can eclipse that. I just think you're going to have to wait 3 years to do it. So I'm not trying to wait 3 years on a catching prospect. I don't know about you.
No, I don't even like waiting like a half the season for a catching prospect unless you're right. Like Francisco Mejia or Gary Sanchez or someone like that.
Right. And then another catcher breathing down his neck on the organizational list is Andrew Knisner. He had a very nice year in the Arizona Fall League. Probably going to be league average defender, which is huge development for him because that was the flaw in his game. But I like the bat better than Carson Kelly, so I think one of those two has to get traded. I like, he's another guy with the Cardinals. They have a good bat to ball, but he's also aggressive. He's not going to walk too much. I think what Knisner did in Double-A was pretty good in his work there. He's probably ready to get promoted to Triple-A, but with Carson Kelly there, I wouldn't be so quick to do it, but, look at Knisner's line in Double-A, 324, 371, 462. So that's a good line, 302, 349, 471 cumulative between Double-A and High-A. 12 home runs, 23 doubles. Just 23 doubles point to more power being there. 49 strikeouts and 361 at-bats, so he makes a lot of contact. Former third baseman a little bit in college. He has to stick behind the plate because the bat might be good enough to be a fringe guy, to play fringe somewhere else, but I think Knisner is a really nice guy to follow, but again, he's a catching prospect, so I'm not all that interested. And back to Carson Kelly really quick. I think we sold him short a little bit with the gains he's been making. You got to remember, he was drafted as a third baseman out of Oregon, high school in Oregon. He's from Chicago area, moved out to Oregon. you know, you look at Carson Kelly, what he did in AAA in 2016, 292, 352, 381, only 10 doubles in 32 games. In 2017, 283, 375, 459, had 13 doubles and 10 home runs in 68 games. So the power took a significant spike, 40 strikeouts and only 33 walks. So plate skills and the power are developing, but I'm still not in on Kelly. And by default, I'm also not in on Nisner from a fantasy point of view. But the Cardinals have the catching position taken care of for nearly another decade with these three guys, with Molina factored in that. So they got a lot of depth in that position.
Are there any other players that you feel are worth discussing in this?
I'll go quick hitter system. Really quick on a few guys. Victor Garcia, nice power guy they signed from Dominican this summer. Elijah Montero is another international guy. Hit for some power in the GCL. Whenever you hit for some power in the GCL, you're going to get noticed. Had 22 extra base hits in 52 games in the Gulf Coast League, tough league to hit. 22 walks and 33 strikeouts. 277, 374, 68 line, good enough for an 840 OPS. So he's got to track a little bit there. Dylan Carlson, I kind of mentioned him earlier, coach's kid. Hell of an approach. I like to swing. Switch hitter, can play the corner outfield and first base. He's a guy to track. The skills are better than the numbers, so don't fall in love with the lack of numbers there. Junior Fernandez is a pitcher, probably a bullpen arm, throws hard, plus changeup. Austin Gomber, big lefty, pretty much major league ready. We get a little AAA to start the year because so much depth here, but he's got a really nice curveball, plus pitch, throws in the low 90s from the left side. So I think he can be, at very worst, a bullpen piece for these guys. Ryan Sheriff's going to work out of the bullpen this year. Let's see, who else we need? The system is good. There's a lot of talent. I'm not just a homer saying that. There's a lot of talent. Darian Gonzalez was out of the 40-man, righty that's 6'3", 92-95 with the fastball, has some injuries. Connor Jones, 69% ground ball rate in the minor leagues last year, 69%. Ground ball rate out of the University of Virginia, 92-96 with crazy sink, average splitter, good breaking ball. I think he's a bullpen arm, but with that strikeout rate is impressive stuff. Let's see. I like Johan Oviedo, 6'6" Cuban. Struggles to maintain velocity. He can get it up to 95 when he's right. Jake Woodford is still there, 92 mile an hour about fastball, good number four starter. Alvaro Cejas, 5'8". Dominican kid, 95 mile an hour. Fastball can get up to 95, has a nice curveball. Tommy Edman is probably a utility guy, doubles power, gap to gap, makes a lot of contact. Scotty Hurst, third round draft pick for them this year, their first pick. They lost the Fowler pick, and then the hacking scandal, they lost a pick. Really good contact guy, kind of Skip Schumacher-esque. Kramer Robinson, the shortstop for LSU, very nice. College shortstops are iffy, though, because a lot of the college shortstops get gobbled up. A lot of the best college shortstops never make it to college because their skills get show off when they're high school kids and teams pay up for them. So I think he's the bottom of the order, high contact guy. Chase Pinder is a nice guy there. Evan Mendoza is my favorite sleeper in the system. North Carolina State, slick fielding third baseman. Hit 370, 430, 550 in the New York Penn League after signing, which is crazy. He was in the ACC this year. Power's a little bit questioned. More opposite field power, 11th round pick. He's my favorite sleeper. And I'll stop there. I can go on for a little bit longer. There's a lot of guys in the system I like. But yeah, it's deep.
All right. I mean, it's always good to have a lot of players that can be fantasy relevant, and obviously
there's a lot here.
That's the thing. Having a good system allows you to A, either trade players and get more talent at the major league level or get some better prospects.
They have the talent and the resources to acquire literally any player that goes on the trade block. And that's not an exaggeration. They literally do.
Yeah, if only they move some of those pieces for
one more piece.
Josh Donaldson.
yeah, they're kind of rumored into him, but I forgot another guy that just picked up, Connor Green, in that Randall Gritchard trade. The numbers are ugly, but the stuff is ridiculous. Touches 99 miles an hour, 694, 97. Ultimately, I think he's a reliever, and I think he's a high leverage reliever because he's heavy sink. It's a ton of ground balls. Nasty arm slot, and be tough on righties. So I like him a lot. Connor Green, kind of profiles to the similar to like a Sandy Alcantara, but the stuff beats the numbers, and I think he's a potential dominant late inning reliever. The numbers are crazy because they're not good for the stuff that he has, but Connor Green could be a very, very nice bullpen piece for a long time.
All right, good. Matt, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I'm BTempFWFB, and I'm churning out these rankings for the draft guide and all these prospect pods, and yeah, it's been busy. Busy time of year.
And I can be reached at BBrandisFWFB. You can find me on the basketball podcast joined by Eric Mackey. You'll also be able to find me during the regular season for fantasy baseball joined by Ray Kuhn and Evan Peterson on one of the weekly shows. So from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball offseason, everyone. Falling